It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 881 for the 10th of May, 2024. This week, some remarkable capabilities have been added to Audacity, but it's still not a contender to take Audition's place for audio productions. In short circuits, it's not a good idea to skimp on the devices you use to interact with your computer. One or more properly placed monitors, a mouse that fits comfortably in your hand, and a keyboard that doesn't result in wrecked wrists are all more important than we may think. And how close is your computer's hard drive to failure? Some disk disasters can't be predicted, but others can, and a free utility program that watches the indicators provided by modern disk drives sounds early warnings. Improvements in version 3 of the open source digital asset manager Audacity, along with some open source plugins, make it a more viable choice for audio productions. TechBiter Worldwide is produced using Adobe Audition, and I don't expect that to change. But the addition of non-destructive editing with version 3.1 in 2022 made it a viable option. Now there are artificial intelligence transcription and noise reduction options available. Until version 3.1, all changes made to audio tracks in Audacity were destructive. Trim a track and the trimmed audio was gone unless the user undid the deletion immediately. Now tracks can be split and unwanted audio can be removed, but it's possible to restore the audio later, even after saving and reopening the file. This works, though, only if the user splits the audio clip and uses the selector to hide audio at the beginning or end of the clip. If you cut using the old techniques, you'll still destroy the data that was there. But that's not why I'm talking about Audacity this week. There are some new plugins that bring artificial intelligence to Audacity. The functionality falls into two primary categories. Features that Adobe Audition doesn't offer, but that don't really work well enough to be depended on for serious work, and features that duplicate tasks that Audition performs better. It comes down overall to Audacity still having amazing capabilities for a free application, but still not quite making the cut. The OpenVINO plugins that are today's subject are provided without charge, and they're easy to install. Download a couple of zip files, extract the contents, and copy everything to C Program Files Audacity, or wherever you installed Audacity. After placing the plugins, restart Audacity, and then use the Modules panel in Settings to enable Mod OpenVINO. The plugins work with Audacity 3.4.2 or later, 64-bit version only, Windows only. That's even though Audacity has versions that run on the Mac OS and Linux. So let's take a look at what you can do with Audacity once you have the OpenVINO plugins installed. Option number one involves removing noise. Although the OpenVINO AI noise suppression function is far less robust than the Adobe Podcast utility, it can improve audio that has been recorded in a non-studio setting.
This is a test recording in Audacity. I'm very far from the microphone, and there will be a lot of background noise.
Removing noise is easy. Simply select the entire track and then navigate to Effect OpenVINO AI Effects, OpenVINO Noise Suppression, and apply the effect. The interface shows additional presets, and settings will probably be added in a future version, but they're not there now. Before the effect is applied, the noise is clearly visible in the waveform you'll see on the TechBiter Worldwide website, and compare that to the second screenshot once the noise has been suppressed, and you can hear the difference.
This is a test recording in Audacity. I'm very far from the microphone, and there will be a lot of background noise.
Audio transcription is an option with the OpenVINO Whisper function. The TechBiter Worldwide podcast is fully scripted. But using a transcription service for an interview that isn't scripted or for a podcast that's created without a script can help listeners. And the OpenVINO Whisper add-in can accomplish that, no charge. Preferring not to give any software the benefit of an even break, I loaded the entire 19-minute, 10-second podcast for the 5th of April into Audacity, selected the entire file, and started the transcription process. I expected to be able to go out to lunch. The first surprise occurred when the process was complete after just 59 seconds. Yep, 1 second less than a minute. The user can choose whether to use the CPU or the GPU. The graphics processing unit will generally be faster if you have a big, beefy, powerful GPU. Otherwise, stick with the CPU. I was still surprised by the speed. The transcription was displayed below the audio track. Lots of lines were present there because I had the entire audio track visible in a single window. When I zoomed in, the text was eventually reduced to just a single line. The placement of the text is close to where the sound begins in the audio track, but not quite exact. OpenVINO Whisper tried to add punctuation, did a decent job most of the time. Sometimes, though, it does mistake plurals for possessives. Text from the transcription process can be exported to a text file. That text file shows the time in seconds and fractions of a second from the beginning of the recording. The TechBiter Worldwide opening has music in the background, and the voice track has been altered quite a bit with pitch and timing and distortion changes. As a result, the transcription was inaccurate. The rest of the opening still has music in the background, but the audio characteristics haven't been altered, and the transcription was dead on. There's also a translate function. It's limited to translations from dozens of languages to English, not the other way around. That's a shortcoming if you have a recording that's in English and you'd like to have a transcribed copy in French, Bosnian, or Welsh. But if you have a recording in one of those languages, you can have OpenVINO Whisper transcribe it to English. I don't know how accurate the translations are. And a third set of features that OpenVINO brings to Audacity, the ability to separate vocals or split drums, bass, and other instruments from vocals on a music track. The function can separate vocals from instruments, or drums, bass, and other instruments from vocals. This can be useful if you want to drop the vocal track and retain only the music, or perform some remix modifications. First, let's take a brief listen to the original. Next, we move on to the bass separation, which is far different from what the bass would sound like in the original multi-track recording, but it contains most of the bass and only a little of the other musical instruments. And the drum separation seems to be more accurate. Drums don't enter this mix for 6 seconds. You'll also hear some bits of other tracks around the 40-second mark if you listen to the entire audio track on the TechBiter Worldwide website. And there are some vocal bits that are barely audible in the full recording, but they appear in this section of the recording. Because the vocal section is so limited, I haven't included those full samples on the TechBiter Worldwide website. Other instruments are also silent for the first 6 seconds, and I think the extraction of other instruments is pretty good, eliminating bass and drums. And then I did a remix. I increased the volume of the drums and the bass track just a bit. Slightly different sound. And there's another feature OpenVINO brings to Audacity, the ability to create a bit of music based on a text description. The more precise the description, the better. I tried asking for an exciting interlude. It didn't seem to be particularly exciting. So I tried a 1 minute selection that I described as a brass band march dirge. The process took about 4.5 minutes to create the file, and the result wasn't a march, a dirge, or a brass band, and the duration was only 26 seconds, not a minute. So here's a brief selection based on the text prompt exciting interlude, which I would not describe as exciting. And then here's what it returned for brass band march dirge, which I had requested 60 seconds of. The result was a little less than 30 seconds, involved few, if any, brass instruments, and I didn't think it was either a march or a dirge. Overall, the results are interesting and worthwhile, particularly the ability to create transcriptions and the function that can separate a music track so that it can be remixed. The current state of music generation is disappointing, but we'll see where it might go. To give Audacity a try, you can download it from the Audacity team website. There's a link on the TechBiter Worldwide website. It is available for Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, but the OpenVINO plugins work only with the Windows version, 64-bit. They can be downloaded from GitHub, and you'll find a link to GitHub on the TechBiter Worldwide website. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the Donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, the one place we shouldn't skimp is the place where many do. After spending a lot on a computer with a fast CPU, lots of memory, and a high-performance disk drive, we decide to save money on the monitor, the mouse, or the keyboard. These are bad choices. The components inside the box are invisible. It's nice to have a fast computer, of course, but not if the components you use to communicate with the computer make you miserable. Most of us never see what's inside the computer, but we spend hours looking at the monitor, the keyboard is in constant use, and you'd probably be surprised how many miles you drag that mouse over the course of a year. These are the things that allow you to interact with your computer. There are straight keyboards and articulated keyboards. Some manufacturers make keyboards that totally separate the left-hand keys from the right-hand keys. Recently, I saw one with a numeric keypad in the center of what was otherwise a standard QWERTY device. Microsoft makes an articulated keyboard that has a detached number pad. I started using one of the ergonomic keyboards when they first became available, and I can't imagine using a straight keyboard for serious work. Occasionally, I do have to use a straight keyboard with an iPad or a Microsoft Surface tablet, but it's very rare and for short periods. Ergonomic keyboards may take a few days to master, but your wrists will thank you. Although I spend a lot of time typing, I've largely avoided any bouts with carpal tunnel syndrome. The articulated keyboard is largely responsible for that, along with a mouse I can wrap my hand around. Microsoft's Sculpt mouse was a good choice, but I've used the Logitech MX Master in more recent years. Monitors may be even more important than mice, or mouses if you prefer, or keyboards. Regardless of what you're doing with the computer, you will be looking at the screen. The sole exception I can think of would be when you're using the computer to play music while you're doing something that doesn't involve the computer. In June of 2018, I bought two AOC 27-inch monitors. One of them failed and was replaced under warranty. The monitors have four inputs, two HDMI, one DisplayPort, and one DVI port. I can switch instantly between the Windows computer and the Mac OS computer, and I still have ports left over for the Surface tablet if I need to use it as a desktop computer in an emergency. Today's monitors are surprisingly affordable unless you need precision color matching for photo or video work. So the primary questions you need to answer are how big and how many. Big depends on the amount of space available in most cases. I found 27-inch monitors work well for my space and my preferred viewing distance. Previously, I had used 24-inch monitors, and the extra size made a lot of difference. How many depends on how you use the computer, but I'm a firm believer that even home users will find a second monitor improves how they use the computer. Some monitors have height adjustments. The AOC monitors did not have that option, so I bought two adjustable monitor stands that adjust to 4.3, 5.1, and 5.9 inches. The 5.1 inch extension is perfect for my use, and it makes space for papers under one monitor and for an audio control console under the other. That's all important because neck and back pain will result if the user needs to tilt their head up or down for extended periods. These are the kinds of things we don't think about very much when setting up our computers, but a little time spent on these issues will improve the time you spend at the computer desk. Some disk drives in computers are misnamed. No disks are involved. Instead, they have non-volatile memory that looks like a disk drive to the computer, but without moving parts. Many computers still have disk drives with spinning platters, armatures, and tiny read-write heads. Regardless of the technology, they can fail. Drive failures can occur without warning when, for example, the read-write head comes in contact with a platter while it's spinning at 5400, 7200, 10,000 RPM, or even faster. When that happens, the heads are destroyed along with some of the platter's surface. Data can be recovered, but recovery won't be complete, and it won't be fast, and it will be astonishingly expensive. There's no way to predict that kind of failure, but fortunately head crashes are very rare these days. Modern disk drives do warn about impending failure, but those warnings often go unnoticed unless you occasionally run a SMART monitoring tool. SMART is an acronym for Self-Monitoring Analysis and Reporting Technology, and it can detect and report indicators of drive health. When SMART notices something that can indicate imminent disk failure, it tries to warn the user. This works, though, only if the user is paying attention. Mechanical wear and gradual degradation of the storage surfaces in a mechanical drive or repeated writes to a solid-state drive's memory will eventually cause the drive to become unreliable. SMART monitors these kinds of issues and warns when disk failure appears to be imminent. A current full backup is essential for recovery from a disk failure, but it's even better if you can replace the disk drive before it fails. Several SMART monitors exist. Some are paid, some are free. I use the free Crystal Disk Info. It's easy to use, and it provides detailed information about how both mechanical and solid-state disk drives are working. It also can be started at boot time, run in the notification area, and show each disk drive's current temperature. The boot drive in my computer is a solid-state device, so it is shown as running at 56 degrees centigrade. The other drives are all mechanical drives running at 51, 46, 48, 40, and 42 degrees centigrade. The red icon you'll see on the TechBiter Worldwide website is a temperature warning for one of the mechanical drives. The warning appears for mechanical drives at 50 degrees centigrade or above. The drive at the top of the stack in an external bay reaches 50 degrees centigrade several times a day, just briefly. The temperature warning for the internal SSD turns red at 60 degrees centigrade. And that seems to happen only when I'm running an image backup of the boot drive. The temperature warnings are unimportant as long as they're at or slightly above 50 degrees for mechanical drives, 60 for solid-state drives. By the way, those centigrade readings equate to about 120 degrees Fahrenheit and 140 degrees Fahrenheit, respectively. Detailed information differs between drive types. The most obvious difference is that there is no disk rotation speed for solid-state drives. The most important information is at the top of the display. Mechanical drives are marked as good or bad. Solid-state drives also show a percentage that drops as the drive ages. Values shown in the lower half of the display are used to determine the health of the drive. The numbers are in hexadecimal format. Crystal Disk Info is a free download. You can get it from the developer or from Older Geeks. You'll find information to both of those sources on the TechBiter Worldwide website, www.techbiter.com. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.